tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. No, that is not the typical Prisoner intro, but this is a song inspired by the episode we are discussing today on AfterBuzz TV's The Prisoner After Show with Steph Z.
What's up? How you doing?
You can find her at I Am Steph Z. She knows who she is.
I do know who I am, and you can find me there, and I'll respond to you, I promise.
And we have Meredith Placco.
I don't know who I am today.
Well, your Twitter's at M Placco.
It is. But is it?
Is it verified?
Maybe it's at Placco M.
Yeah.
That's how you know if somebody is who they say they are, is if they're verified nowadays.
I should have come in with a beard for my reverse role.
We should all have the mustaches on.
Interesting. And, of course, if you haven't already done so, do so. Subscribe on YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV, over on iTunes by searching The Prisoner AfterBuzz TV, or on SoundCloud. It's all free for you. Well, you did not like The Prisoner free, like literally free. And today, of course, we're making all these references because we're talking about The Schizoid Man, Episode 5. Very exciting. So, let's start with overall impressions of The Schizoid Man. Let's start with Steph Z because she's our virgin to The Prisoner. This is our fifth episode.
I know. I really liked this episode, actually. It was very... There was even times where I thought maybe I was fooled, but it's like you almost want to know, you can see what's happening, but then you're like, is that really happening? And you know what I mean? So I feel like this episode was actually done very well, and I like the whole premise around this episode a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I like the identity and the questions we have it and how it plays into even nowadays identity. And I feel like, again, there's another episode that 45 years ago ties into what's happening in the present day, which to me is just amazing how it does that.
Let's see in 50 years if that still applies.
We'll have a reunion. We're going to all be like robots then. Chappies. Yes.
I'm okay with this. I'm ready for my robot overlords.
Are you?
Yes. I just jacked me into the Matrix. I'm ready.
Oh, there you go. Well, then you don't need to know who you are. But what do you think of the episode?
It's definitely one of my favorite episodes from the series. It's kind of got a little bit of everything. We have action. We've got some really intense mind melds. I don't want to use the F word that I'm thinking, but it's a mind screw episode, mm-hmm. and it really causes you to question what is real and what isn't real. And McGowan did such a great job playing 6 and 12 that there are times that, like, if you look away from the screen, it's kind of like, you know, the switcheroo game, the three cup game. You kind of forget. Wait, is he 6? No, he's 12, right? Was he in black or white? Like, it was just done so well, and it was just one of the more phenomenal episodes.
Yeah, and for those of you joining us first time, obviously we'll kind of we're recapping this episode. We'll try not to go too far ahead in terms of spoilers. We might slip up every now and then. We do apologize if that does happen, but hopefully we'll try not to do as much as possible. If there's anything that we miss, of course, we've got 12 weeks to discuss this entire series, so we still got weeks to discuss certain things that we will touch upon. Speaking of that, just my fast general reaction to it, what would have been interesting to that point, production design-wise, right, they made them black and they made them white, so you can tell that difference, but... They very early on didn't know if they should do that or kind of keep them in the same thing to off.
But didn't it switch once?
I thought, yeah.
Because at the end, he was wearing black when he tried to get away. Yeah, so it did. In the beginning, he was wearing, like, he woke up in black. Mm-hmm. Then he was white.
Yeah.
And then at the end again, he was black again.
Well, because he had to be 12 at the end. Or, I mean, he had to be 6 at the end. You know, he had to be the other guy, Curtis.
Right, but then in the beginning, did we see 12, not 6?
Who knows?
I don't know!
This, I mean, we already. What's fun is that we're already having these questions, and imagine if they had the same thing. The only way that would have worked is if you kind of have really long takes, so that way you had to put it on the audience to just continuously watch. Because if you had any inner cuts, it would just be like, wait, which one's which?
Yeah. It'd be like, ooh.
So, but, you know, I'm glad it didn't go there.
Yeah.
Let me run down my typical overview of the episode, and then we'll get into it.
Let's do it, Phil.
Terrence Freely wrote this episode, and he wrote it so well that McGoohan offered him a partnership into Everyman Films with David Tomlin. That's crazy.
That's really – the man who's known for like, no, I want nothing to do with you. This is my ship. Is like, no, you're amazing. Come work with me. Like, that's a big offer to extend.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that inspired Freely to do this was that he was, he met his quote unquote doppelganger in Germany a couple years ago.
Really?
And, you know, I guess we all have one, they say. Yeah. I haven't met mine yet.
I haven't met mine. I've heard maybe some things about mine. That she exists, but I don't know, man. There's only one Step Z. Come on.
You are Step Z.
That's it. Just me.
The one and only.
And even though we avoid the number 7 very much on this series, this is the 7th episode in production. They couldn't avoid that. obviously, a stunt double stood in for the timing reasons, you know, when they shot one for one. The way they did it was they exposed half the frame, you know, with McGoohan, and then they would film the other one, and they would kind of put him in. So it's like amazing. You know, in photography, it's dodge and burn, that type of effect.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because when you first saw, you know, the first scene with the two of them, you could see that they never crossed paths.
Yeah.
Like, it was very clear, you know, that they stayed, each one of them stayed on their own side of the screen. Because I was curious, I'm like, how'd they do that? But, you know, back in the day, they don't have all the technology and stuff that we have. So,
well, and that technique was kind of all the rage when they figured it out in the 60s, because you saw that a lot with I Dream of Jeannie, and Bewitched also replicated that, especially like when Jeannie's twin would come. And I love practical effects. Like every time I see a successful practical effects from like 40 years ago, I'm like, good job, guys.
Absolutely. And more references to Danger Man is Anton Rogers, who plays number 2, was also in Danger Man. Huh, who would have thought?
Yeah.
There were reconditioning scenes that were written in the earlier half of the episode, you know, when kind of he gets taken away, but they were later moved towards his flashbacks, kind of for time. And also, you know, kind of it's a rule of comedy where you do 3 things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the test to see who was really number 6, when they're going tit for tat, there was a race using the boogies.
Oh.
But it was cut because it was winter in Port Marion, and the streets are obviously very, very narrow. So it would have been a nightmare to film. And this was also in addition to Freely's doppelganger. You know, at this time, the CIA was doing these types of experiments, and the term brainwashing was literally coming out of this, in the sense that if you had a mental illness, you could wash it away. So that's kind of the history. And, of course, we would like to thank our friends over at 601 Society. April 17th is coming up, where they're meeting up in Port Merriam with special guest Darren Nesbitt, who plays number 2 in It's Your Funeral. We'll be doing that very shortly, that episode.
Oh, man. I so want to go.
I know.
Well, it's coming up.
Hey. We're going? Wait, did you just say you're taking us?
I know. Is that
maybe.
Is that a surprise?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, we got this.
We going. We go.
That would be fun. I do want it next year. We'll go.
I think.
You know,
so.
We'll complete the journey of this. You know, I can't take Steph C to see number 1 without knowing who number 1 is.
It's true.
So.
It's so true.
I know who number 1 is.
Do you?
I don't know. I feel like I might think something about it.
Oh.
How about we save it towards the end of the episode? That way we don't spoil it for anybody. All right. So we open on the episode. Everyone gets a name, but number 6.
Yeah.
Allison and number 6 play telepathy. What'd you guys think of this scene? I mean, there's a lot kind of going on here.
It was cute because she's such a personable girl, and she's very disarming, which is nice to kind of see number six, engaging with her in a way that he's like, this is kind of normal everyday life where I'm getting into the rhythm of things. I'm going to engage with this person.
It's totally normal everyday life to be able to mind read.
Yeah, that's totally how it works in the 60s. Come on. Everyone knows an LSD anyways.
I mean, the fact that number six is encouraging and accepting of this, you know, I wouldn't have taken him for a person to believe and practice this.
That's why is it number six?
You know, he Ooh. Right when you think you haven't figured, even as as an audience member, you haven't figured out, but I don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this can't, if this holds true to what you guys said, that at the end, that number 12 was wearing black the whole time, then this actually is number 12, because this dude in right now, he's wearing black.
Mm-hmm. So this is number 12. Scene.
I don't know. Maybe.
Could it be?
Well, see, so you think that. That presumes, Well, not to cut ahead, and we'll certainly talk about it a little more, but that presumes that, Allison Test later on, she actually has a connection with number 12 and not number 6, whereas she could actually have an equal connection to 6 and 12, or it's just kind of made up.
Or she could just be an operative.
I actually thought that she was picking the wrong ones on purpose in that test.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
But how could she pick the right ones with number 12?
Well, because
does she have an equal ability?
Yes. I'm saying that she knew the card that he was holding up, but on purpose was picking the wrong thing to make that number 6 or number 12 look not like she has a connection with him.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I feel like the whole time. I mean, I don't trust anyone in the village. In my opinion, everyone in the village is a player to ultimately uncover what number 6 knows.
And we do get a number for her later, right? Isn't she number 24?
I don't really know her number. Yeah. I just know her
as
Allison.
I'm pretty sure that it was number 24.
Like, even in the scripts, because I read the script.
Yeah.
She's just referred to as Allison?
Yeah.
Because it says, when they say number 24, bring the cards.
Okay.
Well, he says to her, number 24, bring the cards.
Got it.
So 2 + 4 = 6. I don't know. I'm still looking for
that could be.
Still looking for the connection.
I feel like we had a 24 before.
I don't remember hearing about 24. Yeah, we had a 14, which was the last woman that was playing games with him.
Steph, you need to keep a tally of all the numbers.
I'm gonna make our own Fibonacci
sequence.
It's
like a tally ho.
Yes. Yeah, a tally ho of our numbers.
That's right. All right, and she not only is, you know, I guess you could chop this off to arts, I guess, or creative thinking, because she also enjoys photography and all crucial photograph of number 6 with the photo op. Him in the cards. Now, one of the things
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say one of the things that we missed last time around was that it's about Hoyle, right? In Free For All, they kept referring to games and Hoyle, and this ties back to this. Hoyle kind of made the rules and these various card games, right? He was known for this, and so it almost ties back to that because here he is, you know, almost not showing his face, so you can't really know if he's got the mustache yet or not.
Yeah,
not that he did, and then whatever, but. So the only identifier is the fingernail, and he's got his card. So who's playing who, and is he calling a bluff?
Mm-hmm. And he's got the card game references. 10 in the background.
Oh, good catch.
Oh, yeah. That is a good catch.
You got good eyes because I can't even see that.
Right, it says 10 fib.
And if you guys are listening to us, of course, the all the pictures we reference are in the download link provided in the description, so feel free to download those. It is not a virus, hack, spam, anything like that. But go ahead, Stephanie, you were going to say something apart from the number 10.
The thing that was the common theme for this episode for me, and again, I could be totally wrong, was like the elapse of time. It seemed like, you know, for like... I'm sorry. I've had a bruise on, like, a finger or toe. It takes a long time for that bruise to move from here to there. So either time has elapsed or they're trying to figure out, like, or number 12 put the bruise in the wrong spot. You know what I mean? Like, because we see this same finger bruise later, and it's, like, three quarters down his finger.
See, this is how we know it's – now I'm jumping ahead towards the end.
This it all is ties. Go
yeah,
ahead.
This is how we know that this is actual – like prime number six because he injures himself. I don't think number 12 ever had the bruise. I think what that shows and what we see with the date when she referenced, we see the 10 in the background, February 10th, is that they keep making him think it's the same day in a shorter period. But in reality, like, much time has passed.
Right. And they keep drugging him and he has no idea his timeline.
And that's how we know is from the bruise extending is how long it's gone.
Well, while we're on this, I mean, let's kind of talk about this, right? One of the things I read about was how time is just completely nonlinear in the village whatsoever, right? And this idea that everyone just accepted February 10th as the day, no matter what.
Yeah.
And why February 10th?
It just was the day.
But why? There's got to be a reason. 2-10? There's a 2. February is the second month. 2's in charge to 10. I don't know.
I love it.
12? 2 it. Plus 10 is 12. I don't know.
Times 2 is 24.
You're the numbers expert.
I know. I'm gonna Rain Man this all out and figure out some sort of. By the end of our show,
oh my God.
I'm gonna have a theory, a convincing theory of why all the numbers.
You're gonna uncover something that someone has not in 45 years.
Yes, I'm gonna do it.
Please, I really want to. And we'll play epic dramatic music. Yes. But the idea that everyone accepted that February 10th, it's. You have to think: is the entire village in on this ruse against number six?
That's what I felt. That's what I've always felt about the series is that everyone is an operative. Everyone is a plant. This was built around a singular idea because the idea like that so many people would just willingly buy into this and like, oh, this is just my life now. I don't buy into that. And I think, you know, it's almost like, you know, what was that movie with, not Sunshine, the guy with God, I'm so bad with my memory today.
Give me a name. Give me an adjective.
The guy with the actor with the funny face. He was in The Mask, but he's more
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey. What was that movie he was in where he was like
Me and Irene?
No, he was in that city.
Eternal Sunshine.
Was it Eternal Sunshine?
Spotlight? Yes, no. Man.
Where he was the only like person, and everyone else was an actor.
Truman Show.
Truman Show.
There we go. We got
Truman
it.
Show. Sorry,
so I told you just anything.
I'm by the way, I'm really sick today, guys. So
see, but
not
the thing is. Where I go with that, and I somewhat agree with you, but in the same sense, that's going through a lot to get, like, what they want is information from this man, why he resigned, to build a whole village. Like, what happened to old-fashioned torture to get the information? Like, not that I'm a fan of torture or anything like that, but, like, it seems like they're going through a lot. And if the whole village is all, like, if they're all in cahoots against number six or like trying to all play number six. Are they just figment of his imagination?
Or it could be a long con in which the government has set this up and they bring in, you know, new people.
Wasn't just for number six.
Yeah. Though it's interesting. So you bring up, is this all in his mind? So something I wanted to tie into was, so the schizoid man, great reference to schizoid personality disorder, which is different from schizophrenia, in which you see a lack of interest in social relationships, a solitary lifestyle, secretiveness, apathy towards your fellow man. And they also live in a rich and elaborate internal fantasy world, which in some ways could describe number six.
Apart from the last fantasy world, which is arguable, I believe I have schizoid.
You are the schizoid man. Right. With your white shirt.
Very, very corporate shirt I am wearing today.
And look, Steph's wearing black and you're wearing white.
That's right. And I made it purposely baggy because I feel like that's like the, you know, the white man, corporate structure. It's just a little unfitting.
You got the alligator and all.
I know,
dude. You're looking
good.
You
need your like summer scarf.
Oh yeah.
And you need to go play polo.
No, you need like this sweater that they put like with the things here.
Yeah.
And they put
the cardigan.
Well, yes.
You know, speaking of dress code, right? So just kind of going, obviously he was drugged and he wakes up. And as he goes over to number two, going over the plan of pretending how to be number six. This is the first time, really, that he's ever kind of accepted his number and apparel from the village, right? He puts on number six for the first time on his heart.
Well, that was, for me, like a reference to this fear of loss, in a sense. It's like, sometimes you don't want to be who you are or you're not content with the things you have until someone wants to take them away. And that's what I felt was going on, because that's exactly one of the notes that I wrote down, that this is the first time he says, I am number six. And you know what I mean? From the last episode, in the order that we watched him, how he is not number six, I am a free man, to this episode, I am number six, was a very big jump for me, you know, mm-hmm. for him to get that that's what's going on. And I really feel that it was... If someone else wasn't trying to say that they were him, I don't know that he would be so, you know, prone to be taking that number on and not saying that he's still a free man and not a number.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So yeah. I think that happens in life a lot. It's like you don't the fear of losing something, even if you're not super excited about what that is, makes people do crazy things.
Yeah, but I feel like to me, I mean, it'd be the equivalent of like if you said, not that I would. I'm trying to think of a good example, but let's say you called me an arsonist. And just because I'm trying to, like, defend that, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm an arsonist. Like, to him, that's the equivalent. Being called number six, I feel like, would be the equivalent of, I am an arsonist.
But that's the only identity he has yeah. in the village. It's all he has at this point.
Hmm. Interesting point.
Yeah.
But he has his past. Can his past not define his identity?
But I think at this point, he might start questioning his past, given all he's been through.
Yeah, I think yeah. so.
I mean, that's a really good point, though, that you don't want to be told that something that you're not. But in the same sense, yeah, it's like if people started, like, say you had a nickname that you didn't really like, but then someone started calling somebody else that nickname, you might be like, no, I'm that. You know what I mean? Rather okay. than, like, that's what I feel like. Like, say we called you, like, Phil Billy. You know, and like you hate Phil Billy. And then all of a sudden we met another Bill, and I'm like, all right, man, I'll call you Phil Billy. You're like, wait a minute.
No way.
You were giving me that attention. Now this random, he's not me. You know, like that
yeah,
kind
you
of.
You don't know Billy that long. You've right. known me for years.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm Phil Billy.
Yeah.
See, that's why I don't know. I'm going back to my, the title is a clue about maybe a bigger sign of the show is that maybe all this is just in his head. And
I was just going to say, is the whole thing just a dream?
I mean, what if? What if it's they're going to general hospital it?
Well, so let's talk about this, and then we'll kind of go back for the tit for tat, right? Later on, when he comes up to Curtis, he says, you know, I had a dream about resigning. And Curtis tells him, you know, why did you resign in your dream? And right. And it, now this ties back into ABC where it was all about dreams.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out why he resigned through his dream. And so this could still be a dream.
You know what? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to say at this point, we are on episode, what is this for us?
Five.
I mean, we're more than a third. We're about a third mm-hmm. through.
Your math better be right, otherwise your credibility goes out the
yeah.
window.
Well, 17.5, you know, it'd be 15 would be a true proper third, but there is not enough to make a fourth. So I am saying about a third, which okay. I feel like is that the correct
yes.
way to put
you have that.
That
about, so that gives you some leeway.
But it's like they can figure out all these things that they're doing, all these things that they're doing. They still can't figure out why he resigned.
But that's the thing is that they just don't want to believe the reality of it. They don't want to believe the simple fact. Like, and we see this in themes in television and other media where people in power will eschew the most obvious answer because they don't want to believe it. They just don't want to believe that something could be that simple.
I think it's life too. I mean, yeah. you know, a lot of times yeah. people don't accept until they've heard it 10,000 times.
Like, Elvis is really dead, guys. I'm so sorry.
He's not.
No, he's not.
I'm so sorry, but he really is.
All right.
He's hanging out with Tupac.
Let's go back a little bit. We skipped a couple of things, but let's pick it back up with who is the real number six. And we get, this was supposed to be a sequence of three, shooting, fencing, and the boogie. But let's start with the shooting aspect of it. Everything synced up properly. And, you know, the way they filmed it, I couldn't tell who was worse or who was better. Obviously, there was that whole point about, you know, you're going to have to do better. You're going to have to do it right-handed because, and whatever. Obviously, I got it from numbers. This is going to be tough to talk about. I got it from the man pretending to be number 12 that's really number 6.
Let's say 6 prime for the original 6.
All right. 6 prime.
6 is not a prime number.
Was holding in his left hand. And he felt discomfort. But other, you know, looking at his actual shooting results, I didn't think they were too bad. In the script, it says he did half as bad as the at six.
Oh, I thought they were bad. I thought it was apparent which one was shooting because you would see, like, some of the bullet holes would be right in his chest and the other one would be on his arm. Like, they both hit him, which I'm sure they both practiced. But in this picture that we're looking at, so the guy in the white is six prime.
No. Right. No.
Black is OG.
Black prime. Is six prime.
Yeah.
Six, or white is six.
Doppelganger. Doppelganger. For
six doppelganger.
Okay.
Is white?
Is white,
white is doppelganger, and then black is prime OG.
Yeah.
See, I
that's sure? why you're the OG, and I'm the doppelganger.
Yes.
See, yeah.
Okay, but the guy with the white coat shot better.
Yes.
Yes.
Hence why he's the doppelganger.
Because he was not conditioned to start shooting from the wrong hand.
That doesn't make sense, what we're saying. The guy in the white shot better.
Yes.
Yes.
So since he what? What did you just say? Since he was
well, because they've been working to condition six prime OG, our original guy, to not actually think he's that, so that he's like now shooting off on his offhand.
So if you think you're left-handed, yeah. but you're holding it right, and you're torn because it's supposed to feel good, but you've been conditioned that it doesn't. You feel weird. You're like,
yeah,
wait.
You're going
to
be off.
Which is why, so going out.
Wow, they kind of fooled me in that scene, I'm not going to lie. Because I thought that, so 6OG is left-handed.
Right-handed.
He's right-handed.
But he's shooting with his right hand right here.
Yes, because the doppelganger told him, you're going to have to do it right-handed. Mm-hmm.
But if he's right-handed and he's shooting with his right hand, why would he be worse than he was?
Because he's been conditioned to think that is bad.
Yeah, that he's left-handed.
I don't know if I agree with that all. I read that scene very differently.
Well, you got to read the script.
Okay, fine.
All right, let's.
But I don't think all of our viewers read the script.
Yeah,
it's available as part of our download links.
All right.
Oh,
guess I'll do.
I'm going to be snarky.
I know
you. Snark.
I guess I'll read it next week.
Yeah.
All right, fencing. So, black is still the OG, 6OG. White is still the doppelganger.
And I'm sorry.
And what are you sorry for?
Because I don't... Because we just said that at the end, OG, like the guy at the end is in black. And we said that's because he had to be like number 12. And so number 12 is in black.
Then I guess
you guys are totally backwards.
No, you're right. Then
we messed up.
Yeah, we messed up.
Thank you!
We're trying to fool you.
No, so because the white coat is better at all this, and he's the OG.
Okay. Now, here's a fun production photo that I want to bring up of the fencing.
Did you not watch it again?
No, I need to watch it again.
So I know we should all just stay and rewatch it.
Here you go. What do you guys think of this? Right. So there's McGoohan, and there's the stunt double on the actual camera. Look at the size of that camera, by the way.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
And so they're fencing, and this is how kind of they shot the various scenes.
That is so awesome and so creative. Oh, that like makes me so excited.
Look at that, and, like, film going through. Oh. Golden age, guys, golden age.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's like back in the day, too, it's like everything cost more and took more time. So I feel like the quality of stuff you got, and I get there's more digital effects and there's more technology now that makes stuff look cool, too.
But Avengers, like, still cost $200 million.
Yeah. So. No, exactly. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, even back in the old days, being a photographer, it's like when you had that film, like, you had to take that extra time and you had to have the eye to frame it up right.
Yeah.
You couldn't just, like, take a snap and look at it and zoom and do this and do that. Like, there was more, you had to have more of a skill in order to capture things a certain way than all the things that allow you to now. So for them to be that creative and for it to look the way it looked is pretty freaking good.
That's very true.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Excellent.
No, I get on that rant a lot, actually.
Oh, I can't stand it.
Because modern day photographers are just like, oh, I can Instagram this and crop how I want. I'm like, no, shoot something good in camera first.
I get more upset that we find meaning in, like, if I just take a photo and they're like, ooh, his focal length is totally on and see what he's doing there with that. And that's why the flower is in focus and the tree is not. It's like, no, I just shot a picture.
Yeah. You're like, no, the automatic focus that my phone did picked that thing, so that's why my depth of field looks like that, and that's why that shit's blurry.
Exactly. There you go. That has nothing to do with my skill whatsoever.
And which is what frustrates us, that you don't really have to have skill anymore to make cool pictures.
That's right.
But it allows a lot more people to play, so I guess it's way more inclusive than we're being.
That's true. The global village.
It is. Going always back to the global village.
Always, man. We need to make a village. We need to make, like, shirts.
I know.
Our global village.
We need to have our own little shirts.
We will. All right. So outside... outside this boxing thing, right? And this is where he starts to really kind of try to come into his own, because he's trying to fight, I don't know which one's which, but Southpaw versus, what is the other one? I forget. Whatever. Yeah. Right and left-handed fighting.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong girl.
Southpaw's left-handed. I know that.
And what's right-handed?
I don't think there is a term like that.
There is.
Okay.
Because the doppelganger said it.
Oh.
But anyway, because you said you're going to have to try to figure out, you know, how you're fighting.
Yeah.
Are you southpaw or righty? And yeah. What did you guys think of this scene? We get Rover for the first time, gets a name. Because we've seen Rover, but he's never had a name.
Up until now, he hasn't been called Rover. Yeah, it was, I just like how they're like, I don't know. Don't know about that.
But so do you think Rover is honestly confused?
I guess it depends. How does Rover detect people? Is it through DNA or is it through visuals?
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
I don't think that they want Rover to get somebody because, like, they want him, number 6 OG, to feel like he's outsmarted Rover.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't, I mean, I feel like if they knew who number 6 was opposed to number 12 trying to be number 6, they would tell Rover who to, like, sick, in a sense, like a dog. Like, Rover's always a dog, like, sick, number 6.
But remember, later on, it took the password for him to really, for Rover to go after the right person.
But it was the wrong password.
No, Schizoid was the right password. Gemini was the wrong one.
Yeah. Told you, it's a mind screw.
It really was. Well, I'm totally gonna have to watch this one again too.
Well, there you go. You know, I mean,
it's really fun though. Like that, that's what's so. I mean, we do all these notes and we research it, and still at some points it confused me.
Well, I particularly am glad that they, again, in the script, there was a lot of the reconditioning earlier on in the.
Thanks, Stephsy.
Sorry, something really big just happened for me.
Excellent. We'll talk about it later.
That has nothing to do with this.
I figured as much, but still, we'll talk about it later. And so, you know, I'm glad a lot of those scenes got moved back because we, early on in the episode, we are left wondering which one's which.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I liked that game, and I liked the, you know, not being ahead of it. And once you do know the dramatic irony, you can maybe be ahead of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, who knows? All right, so we're going to test who is number 6 through a machine test.
That was so fun.
I
love their little...
Why was it fun? Because...
No, anytime they use their weird, like, pinball-esque, you know, DOS-like applications, I just think it's... I don't know. It's just old computers, like, that they thought were cool and techie at the time. I just love, like, machine tests from the 60s. It's just, like, a kink of mine.
Well, I just like this because, you know... Are you really going to put your finger down?
Like, yeah.
How much do I trust that the finger I put down is the finger that's going to appear?
Exactly.
Right.
So so I didn't trust it.
Look at that smug look.
and again, the kind of, they knew what the other was going to say in terms of 12 and 6. And so, you know, I wouldn't trust the machine test either, he says. And so we bring on Allison. And this is, let's talk, let's open it up more general kind of discussion.
You know, this is where they say 24, though, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So we bring in Allison to do the Zenner card test. And we kind of go through it. And, you know, she originally in the script, right, this was going back to McGowan's kind of pet peeves. Let me know if you guys even think this would have worked. She was supposed to kiss number 6 to find out if he's number 6. How would that have worked?
Yeah, because OG 6 never, he doesn't get with the ladies. He doesn't drink. He doesn't.
Oh, that would have worked, yeah.
You think it would have worked?
I think if she would have tried, he would have said no. I think that if she would have went, the way that they're set up in this scene, I don't know why, but I feel like she would have gone to black coat number 12.
Here, and, can we bring that picture up? There we go, for the fans.
Okay, in the black coat, and he would have kissed her, and then she would have right away known, or they would have known, number 6 would have known, someone would have known that the real number 6 would not have kissed her.
Unless but do you think that number 12 would have known that number 6 wouldn't have kissed her, and therefore he wouldn't have kissed her because he knew that number 6 is not a kisser?
But we saw, but we saw when he left with her, he was very familiar with her in a way that OG 6 would not be familiar with another woman. Like, and but does the village know that he's kind of like, no.
But how much do you know a woman without intimacy?
I think there's a lot of people that would say you could
know more about a woman through non-intimacy. That's actually sort of true.
Well, I mean, you got to think about, you know, I'm not saying that this is my practice, but there are people that wait to be 100% intimate until they get married. Yeah. And I feel like they know a lot about each other. Like, I don't feel like just having sexual relations with somebody.
I call it carnal knowledge.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you call it a lot of things, Phil. But I don't know that makes you have a connection, but I don't know that makes you know, like,
I mean, if you have a friend who can read your mind, she obviously has connections with
totally.
You.
Totally.
That doesn't involve.
I would never want to be with someone that could read my mind.
But again, can she read just his mind, or can she read because he's quote unquote more open? And
no, she can read all their minds.
She's actually a scientific government.
Like
experiment.
even in this thing, it's like number 2 is right behind her, probably giving her signs. Like,
yeah.
1-1, like...
I just don't trust her. I just...
steal second base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. There's a great old TV show where it's like, how were you able to read it this time and you weren't last time? Because last time I couldn't see the reflection in your glasses.
Right.
That's good. Good quote.
That was actually a great... Which was funny this week. I saw the Big Bang Theory episode where they were... playing a joke on Sheldon that they could do a card reading trick. So we would pick one up, like pick a card, and then the person said it, and he was totally wrong every time, but they was like, yep, that's what it is. Like, just trying to fool Sheldon that they had this power and he didn't, and he was trying to practice it. It kind of reminded me of this. It's funny.
What do you, I mean, for this to quote-unquote even work, right, if let's say I believe this, her stats is 13 out of 25 and then 73 out of 100. Is that good? Does that prove that she can read minds?
No, I mean, that's just good guessing.
Okay.
I bet you I could get 13 out of 25.
Yeah.
By just guessing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, what's the, find me out the statistics of, of just, if at random you were to guess how many you could possibly get right. Like, what's that statistic look like?
Well, it's a coincidence, I feel, works in a very crazy way.
Because there's 5 cards.
Yeah. But I feel like there's, someone told me this thing once about coincidences, and it was something to this effect. I could be slightly off, but something to the effect of, if you're in a room with 50 people, there's a 1 in 7 chance that somebody in that room has your same exact birthday. So, you know what I mean? Like, there's small, like, if you were to guess.
Let's test this.
That's really specific, because you have 365 days in this.
That's what I'm saying. So just like that, you know, model put in different situations is not like people are just
guessing
birthdays.
But part of it's sequence, part of it's counting cards, right? So,
yeah.
Right,
and part of it's
theory,
coincidence.
There's 5 symbols, 5 of each. So 5 times 25. 5, 25. So you got 25. So you know that there's going to be 25 cards. And so if on the third one, you kind of know the sequence of the first two.
Yeah,
you can
no. There's way more involved in that. It's like statistics. There's like a mean and a mean. It's like there's just because there's 25 cards doesn't mean, you know what I mean? Like, you could, that's if you're keeping the same card. Like, every time you pick up a different card,
but you're
a different
discard. But you're
so
discarding.
It's a 1 in 5 chance is what it is.
If you're
Well, what's the exact rules of the Zenner test? Anyone know?
No.
Of their test?
From what I gathered in this scenario, they were drawing, you know, 1 card from the top, discarding it, and going down the thing. It wasn't like it gets reshuffled every time.
Yeah, so if you eliminate that card, then if you know it's right or wrong, then you can eliminate that from your guessing.
But no, because there's more than one wavy and there's more than one box. Like, every time you pick a new one, there's that same 1 in 5 pick. There wasn't 25 different things. Like, because if if every time you discarded, it made your odds greater, then you're saying there's 25 different, so then it's 1 in 25.
Josh, do me a favor and look up the Zenner test rules.
Guys, I failed college algebra. I just want
statistics
you all to know.
Was my first A in college.
I never took statistics.
I should have looked this up ahead of time.
I love math. I like figuring it out.
Math for journalists. Yeah. But you know, I can at least add 1 plus 1. That's about it.
But all I'm saying is when we see them the first time doing this, there was... He was discarding, and he would do square, and there was that wasn't the only square. There was another square after discarding, so that there's more than one.
But I'm saying there's 5 squares total.
Yeah. So
how do we know?
Because, if there's 5 symbols and 25 cards, what are you just, like, 3 square, 4
no,
waving?
No, 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 yeah, but even if there's like 5, if you pick up the first one and it's a square... And you discard it, the
then
1 in 5
4.
Chance...
There's 4 squares left.
Yeah.
Right, but there's still 5 new tries for whatever that new card is until you get rid of one whole suit.
But that still makes it a 1 in 5.
Yeah, and you don't get greater chances as you go until you're done with a whole suit, which they wouldn't... Well, they aren't doing that many. Okay.
No, but you got a greater... Because, you know, the chances of coming up on a certain card... I mean, I don't know. I don't know
it's
the math behind
five.
It.
Yeah.
I know it's not 1 in 5, but your chances increase as it goes because there's a pre-sequence of what it cannot be.
All right. Why can't you hear me?
Other mic. Okay.
He looks this
11 and 12, I think.
Right. Okay. The Zenner cards. There were a deck made up of 5 simple symbols. The 5 different Zenner cards, a hollow circle, a Greek cross, 3 vertical wavy lines, a hollow square, and a hollow 5-pointed star. In a test for ESP, the person conducting the test picks up a card in a shuffled pack, observes the symbol on the card, and records the answer of the person being tested for ESP, who would guess which of the 5 designs is on this card. And the experimenter continues until all the cards in the pack have been tested. And if the no hypothesis of no psychic ability is assumed, and each card selected for testing is chosen in a random fashion, a user's success ratio approaches 20%. 1 hit per 5 trials.
1 hit per 5. Okay.
So 1 in 5.
Even if it take... Well, yes. Take that, college.
I don't know, man. I still don't...
He just read it.
Oh, no, that's exactly what I was saying, though. I was saying it's 1 in 5 consistently, regardless of the discard.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was saying.
That's what it means.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Right, I knew one math thing, and that's that.
I almost had you fooled.
You've been wrong. You've been wrong twice today, Phil.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Weird.
Phil.
It's the white shirt, man.
It is.
Go change.
I don't trust you. I don't think you're Phil Prime.
You guys are messing with me.
Really? I see that mustache.
Did you see that? That would have been awesome if you just had why didn't you just grow it for today, man?
It takes a long time to grow a mustache.
Come on. You should have known.
I know.
All right. Well, you know, number 6, what he knew was that he had a mole on his wrist, but even that was removed.
It was. They're thorough in the village.
They are
so thorough.
Very, very thorough. But that's like the weird thing because, you know, especially something like that to have on your hand and then to be able to look in a file like, oh, number 6, you know, obviously the files could be doctored so you could say that, you know, which could have been an easier thing to pull off than actually removing them all, but they removed them all. So.
And then they gave the other one the mole, but we've never seen the mole on number 6 before until this episode.
Have we been looking at his wrist, though?
Not a whole lot, I'll be honest.
No, but I feel like we could find a picture and see.
And be like,
it could be doctored, though.
Oh,
they didn't have Photoshop back then, but they had, they had something.
Dodge and burn.
Yeah. They could dodge and burn a mole, dude.
There you go. See all the tips and tricks even back then. All right. So, speaking of reconditioning, he wakes up and we're reconditioning. You know, I found it interesting. In order to reconditioning yourself back to being right-handed, you just shock, you do electrotherapy in the opposite way, in the most painful way.
I don't know if that's actually how it works, but that was really painful to watch. I was just like, why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah, like, I don't know, man. I feel like that. I don't know. You know, it's actually really funny. It made me think of, like, they do use this in current day films. I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you've seen Ocean's 13, when the Julia Roberts is dressing up as Julia Roberts. Like, she's trying to make pretend she's Julia Roberts.
I think that's 12.
Is it 12? And 12. They go to the
Paris
Museum. Right? Yeah. And they ask for an autograph and she signs her name and Bruce Willis is like, Julia's left-handed. So, like, they do play on that stuff. But in the same sense, I don't know. I like the whole left-hand, right-hand thing, but I feel like there could have been something else to mess with him. You know what I mean? Like, if they would have just left him be, I feel like that there could have been, I don't know, it was something for me that was just like, wow.
Well, it messed with you enough.
Yeah.
Right, well, no, but I was correct in the shooting and stuff. You guys had it backwards, so it didn't really mess with, you know, like, the other guy should have just been what he was, number 12.
Yeah, honestly, my first thought through all this until we started talking about it was like, oh, maybe the doppelganger was not of the same hand, and maybe like they had to switch OG so he would like look off-putting. But
right, but in that, I feel like the thing that would have worked better for me was make the doppelganger the hand that OG is, because then it would seem like he was the same rather than trying to change OG, because making him less proficient in his dominant hand didn't really play for me, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, and it didn't play for the village.
Okay.
Fair enough. Well,
moving on.
Rover actually kills Curtis.
Which, did Rover, like, accidentally kill Curtis? Because Rover normally doesn't always kill. Like, Rover has the ability to stun. Why did Rover choose to kill in this instance?
That's a good question.
Well, no, I was thinking the same thing, because if Rover... So at this point in time, OG6 really fooled everybody. Mm-hmm. Because they would... Or maybe not, you know, because they would... I just don't think that they would kill number 6, because then that just, like, the whole thing goes out the window then. Like, they want information from number 6. If they kill number 6, and then if this whole village is built on figuring out this information, so much time, energy wasted.
Well, that's the risk you take.
Well, but they've captured him before and brought him back.
Yeah, Rover has not been set to kill yet.
So maybe it is DNA-based, and he's like, all right, time to get rid of this guy. Ooh. And number the doppelganger was expendable, certainly in Rover's eyes. So it's like, okay, you know, we're gonna figure this out, and we're gonna push number 6 to his limit and really
make him. Number 6 is starting to get Rover on his side. You think he's like petting Rover on the off? He's going to hang out with Rover. He's like, right? Well, that was going to be terrible. The way that would come out. But you know what I mean? He's like hanging out with Rover.
I get what you're saying. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Who is Rover? Could Rover be number 1?
Could Rover be? I just wrote that. Wow. Are you reading my mind?
I'm reading your notes.
I know. I'm just like, Rover's actually really who's in charge. This whole series is really.
Well, but if Rover's number 1, then number 6 actually has control of number 1.
No.
Does he? When has he controlled Rover? No,
because Rover knew to kill the other guy.
No, I think Rover's like, I'm with you. He's expendable. He's done. I don't need him anymore.
It pushed number...
And it pushed,
The doppelganger to his limit.
No way, because if Rover's number 1, he wouldn't have stopped at, like, the barrier in, like, a couple episodes back. Like, he couldn't go any further. Like, number 1 can do it. I don't know. Maybe. You guys are looking weird. Maybe Rover is number 1.
I don't know.
I just love... I love screwing with your stuff. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So I like it. It's kind of fun.
And then basically, it's all about pretending to be number 12 from here on in.
Yeah.
And, you know... And he's...
And number 12 is 1 and 2.
And 6.
And 6.
And it's, he's kind of, you know, and this is funny because it's reminiscent of You're Not Yourself Today. You know, through kind of everybody. But I wanted to... Obviously, we'll talk about the Susan bit. But at first, I want to talk about Allison's testimonial. Because she knows who she's talking to, yeah?
Yeah.
You guys get that sense that she knows she's talking to number 6?
Yeah.
Yes, when she says, if I would have been able to do it again, I would have done it differently. Yeah, because she even addresses, she changes her language in that. She's like, if I would have done it again, I hope he knows, and then she changes it at the end. I don't know the exact words, but like, to directly talking to him.
Yeah, which is why I think she was part of it all along. She was part of the village scheme from the get-go. But she developed a sympathy for 6.
But how did she know that it's number 6 and not number 12?
Because she can read minds.
Okay.
Or not just read minds, but you can read people. Like, even if you have someone who looks alike, it's not like Curtis had a lot of time to really study and become. The only way Curtis was able to become number 6 was through the OG having all the experiments and mind washing done to him for him to start questioning himself. Otherwise, you know, in any normal society, people would start questioning Curtis's authenticity because it's not like he studied to be this person for years.
Yeah, man.
And I think, like, of everyone, Allison was the closest to OG, and I think she just kind of knew.
I love that we're calling him OG.
I know.
Well, Susan, you know, a couple of things when number two says, you know, say hi to Susan mm-hmm. for me. It could be taken as like, hey, you're headed for the grave because that's where she's at. And here's a little blindfold, almost as if like at an execution line.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I like that read.
So.
Oh, that's dark. That's good.
That's really dark.
How did you guys take it?
You're making me scared.
I just felt that's when he slipped up.
Yeah.
I felt it too. I felt that number two was becoming suspicious in the golf car.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I felt that number six was doing a very poor job in playing it cool.
Yeah.
Which to me was a little bit like, man, if this guy is such a good spy and he's got all this stuff going, like he should have been able to pull that off. And I felt myself... I'm such a dork. I felt myself getting really excited. I'm like, oh my God, he really might get out. Like, we'll get to see, like, what's outside this village. Like, you know, there's so many more episodes left, so he's coming back to the village, but you're like, oh, maybe he'll get out for a minute. No, he blew it.
So would it have been more beneficial had he not been, quote unquote, cutting it that close throughout, and the only thing that slipped up was the Susan bit?
No, because I feel like that was a key slip up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying that was a key slip up, but if that was like his imagine if like we're just kind of going, it was a normal conversation and whatever else, and he didn't pick up the line, number two didn't pick up the lines about the general and things like that.
Yeah.
And he, you know, number two, as like a safety precaution, was like, say hi to Susan.
Yeah, I think he, like you made a good point, Steph, is that he was uncomfortable enough and he screwed up enough on little things and he wasn't, it did make me, I'm like, come on, you're a better spy than this.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I felt a little bit like, I don't know why I bought that it would go down that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll test you in a scenario of the same wits and see where
I'm
you
in.
End
up. Test me. Test me.
All right. So let's open this up to bigger ideas of the episode. And this isn't necessarily written down, but it's so near and dear to what you want to talk about, Meredith. Let's talk about LSD. Not because you do lots of LSD. It's just because
I don't. I just, okay, so when we started.
I don't.
I don't.
No, I just want to let the fans know. That's not why we're talking about it.
No, well, so because I'm fascinated by military interrogation techniques and what the military has done. So, you know, during the 60s was, actually from 53 to 64, they did Project MK Ultra, which was where the CIA used LSD as an interrogation agent. And there was a lot of tests from LSD to see if we could alter people's, states of consciousness and use them in our own society, you know, to use like for their own, like get information from them or to turn them on other people. And so I found it really interesting that this episode happened to come at the end of that, kind of when that started to be exposed in the government. And I was kind of like, oh, I wonder, because, you know, but LSD was all the rage in the 60s. So I obviously made that jump. So that's all. I just think it's
those
an interesting.
Those prisoners were like, woo!
Yeah.
It's not so bad being here.
When you think about, like, especially from episode two and the really crazy opening sequence that they had, where it was very, like, it was very trippy. And so there's a lot of.
Well, yeah. And I feel like, too, that when it comes to LSD, the experience that one might have on LSD could be very persuaded.
Mm-hmm.
So it can either be, you know, we've heard about all these good, fun trips where everything's fuzzy and drippy and whatever, but you also hear about people having these bad trips that because something is triggered that they don't want to talk about or something like that. So I feel like it could be a good tool to do that. And there's also this thing where I believe it's like known that supposedly if you do LSD 7 times, you're legally considered crazy.
Oh.
Like there's something about how many times you do it that you legally can, like it's shifts something in you that's not so great.
Interesting. I just think it tied into the overall episode that if one of the drugs that they were using on him was that it could explain a lot of that dissociative identity disorder, also known as schizoid, personality disorder, and which I, like, I, there is a part of me that still questions how much of this episode was reality and not just in his head.
That's, yeah, agreed.
Okay. And so, I mean, do you have an answer or no?
No, I don't. That's the best part is, like, my favorite thing about this show is I rarely have answers. I just have questions.
So how about this? How do you identify yourself? What gives you your identity? One of the things that Meredith does is cosplay. Now, you said, interestingly enough, earlier today, that so is something that you do, but it doesn't define you.
Yeah.
So how do you define yourself?
That's a constant question I'm asking. I'm always wondering, what am I? But I go through these things of, what am I not? Like, I guess there's who I want to be. I want to be Meredith, that really awesome, like, nerdy girl who likes video games and all the things, but I don't want to ever be identified with just one thing. Or I guess I don't want my hobbies to identify me. So I do this crazy thing called cosplay where I dress up on the weekends or whenever. And I don't pretend I'm a character. I just dress up as said character. But because I've been doing it for 15 years, and that's been my more public persona, people identify me as, oh, she's just Meredith the cosplayer. But they don't give me credit of, like, oh, that's Meredith the journalist, or Meredith who worked for NBC, or Meredith who's won awards for her, like, production work. Like, they just see me as Meredith the cosplayer. And it's, in a way, I feel like number six, because it's like, I am not a cosplayer, I'm a person. Mm-hmm. And to have some identity thrust upon you, it's natural for you to fight back.
And because obviously we're talking about identity, it's going to be a little bit more personal. And so, Steph C, don't hate me. But last week, right, you and I had a discussion about kind of your identity, where people see you as this more fun person because you have that bubbly persona. But much, you know, to Meredith's point, there's more to you than just that.
Yeah. I mean, I try and, I feel like a lot of people would use the word chameleon, like, you know, I feel like, and that's not that's a good term, it's kind of a bad term, I feel like, but I feel like, for me, yes, I like to have fun, I like to be present, and I think that's how I want to be identified, as being present, because no matter what I'm doing, I'm present. Like, mm-hmm. when I'm here, I'm super present. When I'm doing my sports stuff that I love, I'm super present. When I'm doing, you know, other stuff, I'm super present. But at the end of the day, too, yes, I'm someone who ran a big company. I'm very business. I love math. And I feel like, for me, that's the biggest thing in having, like, I have, you know, degrees in art and Bachelor of Fine Arts. People tend to identify arts people with aloof and not smart as business people. So it makes sense that people would think that. They would be like, oh, Steph, she's the fun one, da da da. She doesn't want to get down and get to business, but yet I am such an entrepreneur as well. So it is, but I think for me, honestly, like, yes, like, when we had that conversation last week, like, sometimes it does come as a surprise to me, because I feel like the people that know me know my more layers. But in the same sense, like, at the end of the day, I don't really care, because I don't want to be identified, period. So I wouldn't really identify myself with anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, there's so many things.
It's very anti-establishment.
But then let me ask you.
Yeah, because it's so many, like, I'm Steph Z. Like, I identify myself that I am Steph Z.
But let me ask you this. Is it enough to know who you are if other people don't, you know you or
for
care,
me it
or
is you're and I feel that a lot of the people that it's not is because they don't feel identified or validated in something that they want to be associated with. Like, I feel validated, like, I've been and I'm not saying that this is why I feel that way, but I've definitely, like, in the fashion world that I've worked in, I mean, I sold my brand worldwide to Saks Fifth Avenue, Neiman Marcus, Bloomingdale's. I did a line with Warner Brothers. Like, I was successful. And I was successful because I was doing things that I liked. And once it got to the point where the industry, I didn't like what was happening and I wasn't happy anymore, I was able to, even though there was lots of money and all this stuff involved in that game, I was able to take myself out of the game because I wasn't happy. So for me, that's my identity, is being, like, who I am in what I do.
It's really interesting you bring that up, because that's actually something I've been struggling with since I moved out to LA, is that I feel like nobody knows what I did or cares, and I'm kind of like, and now that I'm very new removed from the news world, like it hasn't even been a full year since I quit, and now I'm actually struggling with that. I'm like, no, I'm Meredith the NBC girl, like that's who I am, and I'm like, no, wait, I left that world, and I left that world for reasons. So why do I still want to be identified as that? Like it's great to know that they're like when time goes by, like you can just resolve yourself.
It is so many people, like I get asked literally at least 2 to 3 times a month, why are you not still in the fashion world? You're successful. You know all these people. And it's just like, I didn't like the game. It didn't make me happy. Like by 10, 11 o'clock every day, I was pissed off at something. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I could start a brand and the Steph Z brand and make merchandise. And yes, I like to take pictures and make cool t-shirts. But like, you know what I mean? I didn't want to. I don't know, like to me, and I don't know where I got that, you know, I guess I'm super traveled, so I feel like I've been exposed to a lot, so I see that there's a lot more out there. But yeah, like I feel really happy, and that's one thing that I do have, that I have been able to figure out, I guess.
Now to further that, with the age of, like we have digital media, where so much of who you are can be crafted towards the audience you want because of social media. You can really just be the person you want. How does that make you feel in terms of establishing your identity now?
Well, all the more too. Plus you know, speaking of statistics and measurement, it's all about likes, followers, and whatever. And so you have the ability to judge your performance of your performance based on that.
See, I don't agree with that because I feel like...
But there's people that do that.
There are people.
And that's fine. But for me in my world, like, yes, I get it's important as being a personality that you need to have followers and all this stuff. Like, I get it's important because it's part of the game, but yet I get that it's bullshit because there are people out there that their content and the stuff that they're trying to get out into the world is trash. So they're going to have trash followers. Like, for me, I'd rather have, you know, a few thousand followers that are actually smart and care what I have to talk about than, like, putting on some, like, stupid video of me either, like, running around and, like, flashing people, trying to be sexy in my bikini to get likes, or, like, farting into the camera. Like, there's just stupid stuff that people put out there that gets following or goes viral. And to me, like, I don't need that. And in the same sense, if you need those followers and if you need those people...
That validation
or whatever to be that personality, to get that job, I'll just create my own damn platform.
You know, 10 years ago, we didn't have this problem. People weren't hired based on how many likes they had on Twitter. We actually had genuine, authentic people who were good at their craft. Now we have people in positions of entertainment and journalism who get hired based on how many likes they have. And it's not based on any sort of, like... devotion or love or desire to spread something that they're passionate about.
Or intelligence. Which is my biggest problem.
I'll take it in slightly. Let me kind of move it in this way, right? So there's a theory that I heard a couple weeks ago.
And go ahead. Okay. Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. To go back to the thing about what you said about me, how last week it was taken that I'm fun and that I'm not business. It doesn't necessarily bother me, but I challenge you and everyone else that might think that, is that why do you associate being fun as to not being business? Hmm. Like, that's what I feel like a lot of people, like, you have to be, like, you know, if I was to come in here and be straight-laced and be this, that, and the other thing, would people then think that I'm more serious about my craft?
Maybe they
would.
You
know what I mean? But that's not who I, like, who wants that straight-laced, boring person?
But here's the thing, then, you know, part of it is you have to accept, like, if you're not getting the results, you know, I tell this to people a lot. If you're not getting the results that you want and you're going about it in a certain way, do you have to change your tactics? You know, well, not necessarily like who you are.
Yeah, no, I know what you
but
mean.
Your tactics.
Yeah, well, I feel like there's a balance, but I feel like there is a general stereotype that if you're fun, you're not serious. And I feel like there's a way that you can be both.
Let me know. So here's where I was, you know, there's a study that's kind of long been since, you know, that the average human can keep kind of 150 relationships in any kind of capacity, right? And in the old days, right, it used to be a very localized thing. Now, with the world, you know, one of the reasons why people think that, you know, people are assholes in the streets or whatever is because you have no connection to that person. You feel like you're not going to, you know, we're beyond the point of knowing. The human mind cannot understand that, wow, there are 6-7 billion people in the world, and you really should kind of care overall for most of them. And so just because you don't know them and you cut them off in on the freeway, you know, it's not okay to be an asshole in that respect. But had you had that connection to them where you're going to see them later on in the day, yeah, you would not be that asshole.
Well, I think, too, that also goes back to the brain and how the brain processes. I believe the brain can only process 7 things at one time. So mm-hmm. if you're walking down the street, you're walking, you're looking, you're listening to music, maybe you're on your phone, you're doing like all these things you don't even realize that there's something, you know what I mean? There's a noise from the subway, there's a light over there, there's a car turning over there, you're done. Everything else is like...
You said it right there. People, like, on a general sense, people have become noise. Mm-hmm. The internet right. has become noise. I mean, we right. and we don't treat people like humans anymore. I mean, read comments on anything, ever. Even if it's not anonymous, people are not afraid to say what they feel.
No, they are not.
Where, like, I feel like 40 years ago, I was in a bar and we were talking politics. There are certain things you probably wouldn't say to my face, you know?
Well, and that goes back, too, to the whole that there's so much saturation in content now. Mm-hmm. It's like years ago, like, if you wanted to do a show or if you wanted to be on air somewhere to voice your opinion, you had to tell someone. You had to tell, like, your agent or something. Then your agent had to tell someone. Then this person had to tell. There was, like, so many filters to get somebody that was smart enough or that fit that role. Now any schmuck can put their phone on them and put it out.
Yeah. So not to kind of take it away from this conversation, let's bring back just to identity today. And one of the things that I thought of was identity theft today. There's a hilarious old I think a year old Identity Theft, right, with Jason mm-hmm. Bateman and Melissa McCarthy. And the reason I thought of it was not because whatever, it's an okay movie, whatever you guys think, but the idea that you can become friends with the person who's stolen your identity, right? That's the entire premise of this movie. I find that hilarious, and I think I could see that as the future. Because, you know, identity theft is so prevalent today. You have to guard all your information, right? Speaking of going back to number...
I think there's just
degrees. Going back to number 6, not being wanted to call a number 6, but then saying, I am number 6, right? So I don't want to be called, you know, based upon my bank number and my social security number, but at the same time, or my license number, but I don't want to give that up to anybody else.
Yeah.
That's my identity.
Right, but in the same sense, I think it's very different when you're talking about Jason Bateman's character who finds compassion for Melissa McCarthy's character that doesn't have any money, that might need this, that might need that, rather than, I don't know, that the Sony people would find compassion for the terrorists that broke in and stole their identity.
Or the Sony
I don't know that they'd hang out.
Okay, but I'm talking on an individual level.
I don't actually know.
But it was individual. No. They stole a lot of their
because
employees.
We as humans have become so salt. No, I'm not saying I don't think it was North Korea. I think it was a employee who did this anyhow.
Any way you slice it, I don't think any of those people are going to be too happy to be like, yo, man, let's go get a beer.
Like, if I found someone who stole my identity, which has happened, I look forward to punching that person in the face repeatedly. I will not be their friend. I don't care about their crappy circumstances. You don't steal from people, hands down.
Kind of agree. I've been stolen from.
Yeah, and I don't see humanity as a whole. Maybe this is me not having that glossy Star Trek idea of the future where everyone actually like is in utopia. I really believe in like the more dystopian future that we as humans just don't necessarily like each other.
Let me ask you this, and as far fetched as it may be, please just kind of take it for an extension of it. Can we get to a point because we're going to be so isolated that it's almost going to be a compliment to have your identity stolen by one person and be like, why did you want to steal my identity? You find me interesting? Is that why you want to steal my identity? Huh?
I think is such the problem. And I love you, Phil. I do. But that statement just, right there, I feel like is such the problem with the world that you actually think they stole your identity because they wanted your identity. They stole your identity so that they could steal money. You were just like a vehicle to something else. It wasn't like, oh, let's recreate Phil Spitek because there's not enough of them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We are getting to that point where it's so bizarre.
So one of the big things, too, with anyone who's on the internet with any sort of fame, you'll find your photos on dating sites or Facebook pages.
Oh, I've dated a few people online, apparently.
Yeah, it's like people will take your identity because they find you fascinating. Do I find that flattering? No, I find that creepy. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's gross. Like, be yourself. If you can't be happy in your own skin, then how can you be happy?
And I'll take this to a business place, too. So one of my T-shirts, H&M stole my photograph and put it on their shirt. And people are like, oh, because, like, suing them and doing this would be take so much. No. Like, it wasn't even really worth it. But and they're like, oh, you like, the biggest form of flattery is da-da-da-da.
No!
I'm like, bullshit! You stole my freaking picture, and you're making money of it. Get me paid. That's flattering. That's, like, you know what I mean? Like, call me up and say, I want you to do a line for us. Flattering. Steal my shit.
Intellectual property theft.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yes. Well, very prevalent with Robin Thicke and Marvin Gaye at the moment.
Yes.
Who's being sued again.
Which is so weird because I did listen to those two songs and I'm like, I've seen better instances of music copyright infringement than that one.
Fair enough.
Just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, I was also going to talk about Descartes, existential crisis, prisoner's dilemma, but I know that would be opening up a whole
can of worms.
And I
ruin everything because I have to leave for my other show.
You did. But
I have a bit of trivia, though, I wanted to share.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so oddly enough, I was watching, me and my boyfriend have been rewatching Star Trek The Next Generation, and we were on season 2, episode 6, called The Schizoid Man, which was funny because then I watched the prisoner episode right afterwards, but... Did you know they wrote that episode with McGoohan set to star as Dr. Ira Graves, except McGoohan had to back out last minute and they replaced him with W. Morgan Shepherd, which
did
I thought was really
know
interesting.
That.
Yeah, and it's and, you, and the whole awesome. Theme of the episode is a man who's dying. He wants to play. He places himself in Data's body.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's really interesting to see, like, I don't know. It just made me happy. I'm like, oh, the Star Trek people are paying homage to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's some real fast trivia too. By the way, look up Descartes, look up Prisoner's Dilemma and all that fun stuff. The Tally Ho has the same date and headline as an A, B, and C. And if you read the newspaper, it's just a jumbled mess of words. And does that indicate that the village has literally nothing to say to its citizens?
Yes.
Yes.
So there you go. All right. So this has been Schizoid Man. That is the password. Stephanie, do you know the password?
I don't know. Schizoid Man or Gemini? Gemini, Schizoid Man.
There you go.
See, I was like ready to talk about Gemini and how the sign of Gemini and all this stuff, and I just had the wrong password.
We need to have the after show.
I had the wrong password.
There's so much to talk about every week. But,
the password is always open sesame.
So by the way, I've been commenting to you guys back on the various platforms, so continue to do so. I know we keep promising to try to get it on the actual episodes, but it's becoming evidently that it's not quite possible because we like to talk.
Too much to say.
But that doesn't mean stop doing what you're doing. Like I said, we keep reading it. I keep responding. I know Meredith responds and Steph C responds in the various outlets. So again, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever else, let us know. And speaking of that, Steph C, how they directly communicate with your identity?
You guys can see me and my identity on Instagram and Twitter at IAMSTEFZ.
And Meredith Placco.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MPLACKO.
This has been Schizoid Man. Don't forget to rate and comment. And also, if you know of a friend that likes The Prisoner, or if they've never seen The Prisoner, get them to watch The Prisoner. Get them to watch this. And on April 17th, go to the 6-1 meetup thing over at Port Miriam with Darren Nesbitt. We'll see you. Be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later, and go see The General, because that's what we're doing next week.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.